From Interfaith Alliance, this is State of Belief. The program and this podcast are made possible by Interfaith Alliance and its members. For more information on Interfaith Alliance and its work promoting faith and freedom throughout America, visit interfaithalliance.org. Welcome, everyone, to State of Belief. I'm Welton Gaddy, president of the Interfaith Alliance, broadcasting from the Radio People Studios in my hometown of Monroe, Louisiana. Friends, I must tell you, the last several days have been tough ones. The death of Walter Cronkite sent shockwaves through the Interfaith Alliance community. The Interfaith Alliance has lost the honorary chairman of its board. I have lost a good friend. On this hot summer day, my mind goes back to a cold winter day, January 15, 2006. The first time we entered a studio to do the very first program of State of Belief. For a long time, my dear friend Walter Cronkite had told me that when Interfaith Alliance launched a radio show, he would be my first guest. When I called and asked him if he would do that, immediately, as you would expect, he kept his word. He joined me in the studio that day, and I remember particularly the excitement with which he came. It was not just another interview. He took this very seriously. We did the interview, and it was lively, it was substantive, it was good. Good not only as the first interview on State of Belief, but good for a long time. And today we're beginning this week's State of Belief, repeating the broadcast of that interview. Here, friends, is the first interview ever on State of Belief with the most trusted man in America, Walter Cronkite.
Walter, I can think of no other person that I would rather have as the first guest on this show. Thanks so much for being here.
I'm delighted to be invited.
Walter, you have, through the years, vigorously protected the objectivity of your reporting, carefully telling a story and not injecting personal opinions into it. But in recent years, you've decided to voice your opinions, especially about the religious right and what's happening in the fusion between religion and politics in this nation. What brought about that change? What made you decide to speak out?
During my long years as the anchor man of CBS Evening News, I was obligated to respect only the facts and not opinion. Hearing to that, I felt myself handicapped in speaking out about what I thought about what was going on in the activities of the far right.
Over the past decade or more, you've been a really grand supporter of the Interfaith Alliance, and of course a part of our work focuses on countering the religious right. I've often wondered, would you ever have imagined in prior years that this kind of agency and mission would claim so much of your attention?
No, I don't think I would have, although certainly my feelings about the place of religion in our lives and in our politics, indeed, in our daily lives, was not something that came to me late in life. I've thought about that for a great deal from many years ago when I was an altar boy in a newly found church, a Unitarian church in Houston, Texas, that my father organized.
I saw a USA Today poll that was taken on December the 18th that showed that 49% of American adults say they believe most members of Congress are corrupt. And the numbers remain below 50%, changing very little when people were asked specifically about trust for Democrats or trust for Republicans. That kind of lack of confidence in our leaders does not bode well, of course, for a participatory democracy. So let me ask you this. As the most trusted man in America. What counsel would you give to members of Congress on how to regain people's trust?
Well, the answer is simple, quite simple. Actually, achieving it is not as simple. And that is, tell people the truth. This is fundamental. Obviously, many politicians, as those in business and law or anywhere else, are likely to shade the truth. It's not new in our lives, not new in our government. It's been a feature of government as long as I think we've had one. But that does not relieve us of the responsibility to say, now we ought to try to straighten this thing out. We've been living it for 200 years and getting by with it. But why just get by? Why not try to improve the system? And I would insist on that you can only improve the system with honesty.
In an earlier segment on today's program, I spoke about how I think religious pluralism in this land is in danger. You recently expressed concerns focused on an even more basic danger. There have been several occasions recently where you have said you think democracy is in great peril. Why do you say that?
In making that statement I'm tying it to the state of our education in the country, I base everything I say from here on out on Thomas Jefferson's once statement that I sort of live by, and that is that a nation that expects to be ignorant and free expects what never can be. If we cannot teach our children properly to bring them into an intelligent adult age, we are endangering our very existence as a democracy.
I imagine most of us could cite sources that we think are part of the problem. I would, for example, talk about the lack of civics and education in politics and government. But I have to ask you, because you know more about this than anybody else, do the media have to take any responsibility here? And let me expand that. If a person is watching national news programs, the evening news and cable news and all of that, are they getting a good education in democracy?
Well, that's such a broad question.
I'll get in trouble if it's more specific.
Yes, I think you're already in trouble with that question.
Walter, just one general question. Looking back over your extraordinary career, which started covering World War II, is there one thing you're most proud of or that you feel most fulfilled by in your career?
Well, good gracious. I think of all those things that I've been pleased to have a part in reporting. There have been so many important stories in these years. Undoubtedly, the most important of them, to my mind, was the fact that man achieved the seemingly impossible and walked on the moon. This will be the leading story of our time for 500 years, even as Columbus's landing is still the date that school children learn today. I am reasonably satisfied now that I have practically retired, although I don't want anybody to think that would like to hire me for a speech. But I have retired from active daily journalism, and as such, I can look back on a lot of stories that I think we did very well, that were not necessarily my successes, but were the successes of our team of news producers. We had some very fine ones. I was proud particularly that I took a public role about the Vietnam War at one point, a very unusual situation with CBS of a reporter being able to state a personal opinion. But there I thought it was so important to say that we really had done our best in Vietnam, but now was time for us to get out. And I think I had some influence in that particular case. It might be that under the present circumstances in the Middle East, there might be somebody who'll stand up and say that there.
Walter, for many of us, your voice accompanied all of the events that you've talked about, and you led us through them. You have been in this nation a model of truth-telling and of patriotism, of journalism, and a really good friend. Thank you.
Well, that's too much, but thank you.
I'm Welton Getty. You've just been listening to my 2006 interview with Walter Cronkite, who passed away last weekend at the age of 92.